Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. Gorgeous day down here, by the way.
It is. Good to be with you guys.
Just a general question, and we will take calls, by the way, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590, if you want to talk to Mark Shapiro. Just a general question, your thoughts on what you've seen so far, things you really like in particular.
It's been it's been strange in that it's been a relatively uneventful camp. I think the hardest maybe thing to judge is that we haven't been on the field together. But when you walk around the diamond and think about each position and each player, and you recognize that we are a veteran team, I would say it's been a camp with intent. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, a sense of purpose. These guys came in here with confidence, an understanding of how good and how talented they are, an understanding that, you know, they're not out to prove anything day one, but slowly build towards April 3rd and starting the season and the pursuit of a championship over 162 games. And by and large, almost in every case, we're about where we should be at this point of spring training. So in addition, there's been some, you know, pleasant surprises with some of the depth arms, I think, that you know, maybe showed particularly well in here, and even some of the depth position players as well. So just an overall positive camp. I mean, it hasn't had any of those huge surprises either way, but we've methodically worked towards opening day and towards the pursuit of a championship.
Does it matter, Mark, that, you know, because of WBC and because of not so much injuries but kind of rehabbing and you know, getting Donaldson ready, getting Devin Travis ready, being patient with that, does it matter that that lineup hasn't been together really until, you know, today?
I'll let you know in July. But, I mean, it's been, I think if anything, it's maybe a little frustrating just because you're not getting an opportunity to see those guys all together. I would say with a younger team where guys are trying to learn each other, maybe it's a double play combination that has not had a chance to work together. It's an infield that needs to learn their communication style. It's outfielders that haven't had a chance to communicate. In our case, with a veteran team largely returning, you know, and a couple of the new guys maybe more offensively minded, you know, and not factoring in key defensive, you know, positions, mm-hmm. with Kendrys and Steve Pierce, I feel like it's going to matter a little less. That being said, I still, and we're still right, we're going to right at this juncture right now, the last 10 days of spring training, I kind of feel like you want to start to get your team out there and gelling. So I feel like as we build over the next week, Stephen, I'd like to see our guys get a chance. And I think we'll have that, whether it's here or in Montreal, we'll have that happen.
Marcus Stroman had a terrific World Baseball Classic. Well, he finished it off in a very strong fashion. You know, I was over in the Yankees camp on Tuesday when they found out about Didi Gregorius. They may have a different view of the WBC now than they did going in. But, you know, quite often I think we see guys who really can really profit from that experience. And I'm wondering if maybe you think Marcus is that type of guy. Just, you know, being a star around your peers.
Yeah. I mean, I felt in Cleveland that Carlos Santana, when I was at the WBC Finals 4 years ago, and I watched the way the Dominican players rallied around Carlos and the way he kind of emerged as a star player, and I feel like his career went to the next level after he left the WBC and felt that role of, I'm a guy, you know, like mm-hmm. that, you know, this is a mental game. And so, you know, the one thing we've always known about Marcus is he shines on the big stage. I mean, the bigger the challenge, the more energy, the more excitement, the more intensity he brings to that. I'm not necessarily sure that, you know, he's going to be any different, other than the fact it's another affirmation that this guy's a big game pitcher and this guy shines in the brightest moments. I think in general your hypothesis is one that I think is true.
It's probably good we're late in spring training in that, because I'm not sure Dunedin will be able to contain him at the moment.
It's a small sleepy town, but that's where the world of social media probably provides outlet for that.
Yeah, that's a healthy outlet.
Global outlet, but, yeah. being the apt description. Ask you very quickly about the reports about John Gibbons having a 2-year deal plus an extension done. Hasn't been announced yet. people seem to be acting as if it's going to be announced at some point. That's my political way of asking. Is there, well, why the holdup, I guess? Or is there no change in status?
I mean, I don't think there's a holdup, and there's, you know, nothing that's really changed from the way we communicated to the outset of the offseason mm-hmm. last year through the offseason into spring training. And I think that speaks to Gibby, who he is, that, you know, we're in here to get a club ready, and it's not, you know, about Gibby. It's not about Ross. It's not about me. And, you know, we're working on those things behind the scenes. And in the daily conversations, 98% of them are focused on the guys that right. we're looking at out the window here in the press box on the field, getting ready and making sure this team's ready, and having conversations about Rowdy Tellez when he gets sent out, and how do we ensure that transition down to minor league camp goes well, and how do we make the best decisions for the last two spots in the bullpen. And oh yeah, we're working on your contract, and we feel like we're definitely going to get this done. He wants to get it done, we want to get it done. But you know, I guess that's why maybe the holdup mm-hmm. that it's just
not
focused. We're focused on other things right now. But
is it done? But for the physical,
I mean,
John
I'm going to let that be for Ross okay. and Gibby to announce. But again, I think you can read into the comments that we're extremely optimistic and confident we're going to have something to announce before the season.
Well, let's pretend that it's done for the minute, Mark, and say, you know, John Gibbons, when you arrived here, John Gibbons was a guy you had not worked with. You knew him by reputation, I guess, but you probably didn't know a whole lot about him. What have you learned about John Gibbons in the last couple of years?
I would say, you know, again, and I think that human nature is you tend to pick people apart rather than celebrate their strengths and their positives. And I would say that Gibby is a guy whose strengths and positives fit perfectly with the situation and circumstance that we're in. And to some extent, you know, separate him from, you know, the bulk of other leaders out there and managers out there. You know, one is consistency in a schedule that provides 162, you know, points of data which you can react to emotionally and get up and down. That emotion often leads you to poor decisions, you know, bad communication that impacts a team and the way they perform and play. Gibby, you know, endures that, you know, grueling schedule with a level of consistency that is remarkable. To me, I really feel like that to me embodies strength, that embodies toughness and character that, you know, separates him from other people. So I think he's a tough guy. He's a strong guy. He's incredibly consistent. And when you talk to major league players here, elsewhere, historically, you know, one thing you find that they will universally value is a level of consistency from the manager to know what to expect every single day, regardless of whether you've won 3 in a row or lost 6 in a row. He's the same guy. So I think that plays well over the balance of what is a very tough schedule.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Blue Jays, has graciously agreed to join us for the first hour. Brian in Bowmanville, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Brian?
Hi. How you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Pleasure to talk to all of you. I guess I just had a quick question for Mark, and I think you're doing a great job, by the way. I just wanted to say, how left field, I know it's been, you know, a topic of conversation this spring. Do you guys plan on maybe going out and getting somebody, maybe before the season starts, to address left field? Somebody can give you some, maybe a left-handed bat, maybe some, you know, can drive in some runs. And the other question I had was, do you think that some of the changes to Rogers Center coming up this season, maybe we would see some, maybe like some statues outside the stadium of some of the famous Blue Jay players, like Roberto Alomar, players like that, of that nature? I see that a lot of stadiums have that around baseball. Thought it'd be really cool to see that. Thanks a lot.
That's cool. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate the comments, first of all, and, you know, two good questions on very different sides of our operation, and I'll do my best to answer both of them. Left field, obviously, you know, it's when you look around an established major league team and you've got guys that very clearly, you know, represent who's going to play, and there's not much, you know, there's complete clarity as to, you know, who's going to play at almost every position. You get to left field and you say it's a little harder to figure out. I guess I would tell you that, you know, you never build the perfect club the day you leave spring training. We feel like between the group of people we have at first base and left field, that we have good answers within here, especially with some of the other franchise-type players we have around the diamond elsewhere, that we have more than enough productivity and defense out of left field. That involves Ezekiel Carrera, Steve Pierce, B.J. Upton, and really Justin Smoke. So it's four guys, and Kendrys Morales to some extent too, because he can factor at first base. So it's five guys, looking at those five guys kind of handling DH, first base, left field. And I don't think you can look at left field in isolation. When you really look at Ezekiel Carrera and the body of work that he's put in, he's a darling of the analytical world. Those guys tend to sing his praises and feel like he's a solid average major league left fielder. And again, if we have a solid average performance out of left field, we can win. That's not going to undermine us. So, and if not, it is an area that, you know, again, you play the first 60 games and 70 games kind of evaluating. That is an area we certainly could adjust and adapt and upgrade to. But I think for now, between that group of five guys I just gave you, we think we can solve first base, DH, and left field and figure that out.
Steve Pierce historically, Mark, has had issues with durability. Have your high-performance people looked at that and looked at him and tried to understand why that's been the case?
We don't have any clear answers for that. I feel like our performance people can help us there. But I guess my answer to you would be, if you look at his performance, it's actually not good. It's elite. If he had not had health injuries, he would be a $20 million player. So our ability to afford him and get him in here is largely due to the fact that, you know, we probably don't project him to be a 150-game player. We project him to be less. And if we're able to build him to the point and take advantage of a performance staff that we feel potentially can provide us with a competitive advantage, that's one area where they might have an impact. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. The second question, you want me to jump
in? Yeah, they're on the statues, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd rather answer that, you know, A, I liked statues. I mean, we did it in Cleveland, obviously. We had five or six guys, Jim Thome, Larry Doby. I think they're doing Frank Robinson out there this year. And so I like that kind of tribute to history, to tradition. And we're really getting to the point where the tradition of the Toronto franchise is becoming a rich one. It's a relatively young franchise, you know, so that's something to remember. But I think we don't want to do one-offs, and we're not quite at the point where you're going to see the changes to the Rogers Center this year. We're still doing the work we need, thinking, being very thoughtful, recognizing that the plan and the change is going to be one that we hope endures for 20 years. And listening to our fans, surveying, having focus groups, engaging wherever possible to both look at best in class out there and what makes our fans unique and what they want, to come up with a comprehensive plan, not, you know, one initiative here, one initiative there, that has a set of themes that guide it. And really, overall, take what was built as a multi-purpose stadium and make it a ballpark. I mean, that's very simply what we want to do. We want to make Rogers Center first and foremost. Not that we won't have other things going on there, but we want to make it a ballpark, which is different from a stadium.
How much work, I hate to use the word cosmetic, but how much of what you're looking at doing is, you know, essential, foundational, operational work, and sort of maybe more aesthetic? Is there a balance there?
There is a balance. I mean, I think you look at systems, you know, infrastructure, concrete, right, things that mm-hmm. need to keep a building standing. It's actually pretty remarkable, because the building for a building that's nearing 30 years, it's pretty remarkable. It's in good shape. It's in good condition. That being said, there are things that are not that exciting to talk about, chillers and coolers and, mm-hmm. you know, concrete and roof infrastructure that absolutely will need to be dealt with. And to give a percentage or a number, I'm not sure it'll be a meaningful part of the project, but not the part that fans will see. But it will not impact, there'll still be quite a bit that will be noticeable and that will be of high impact when we finish rolling out a plan. Hopefully, you know, we'll be able to, you know, get into the details of that by the end of this season or next offseason.
Let's go to Allie in Pickering. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Mark Shapiro. Go ahead, Allie.
Oh, hi, Jeff. Thanks, guys. A pleasure to talk to Steven and obviously Mr. Shapiro. I just want to say I'm really happy as a fan with how things have transpired since you came in, Mr. Shapiro. Really think you've brought a lot of professionalism to the organization, especially the handling of the Edwin situation, which, you know, I get into fights with people all the time because I'm a big fan, and, you know, obviously everyone wanted Edwin to stick around, but I feel like you made him a very fair offer, and they didn't accept within the timeline that you gave them, and you went in another direction. Would that be a fair characterization of how that played out and how things like this will play out in the future in terms of players demanding certain amounts of money? I just want to get your thoughts on that. And I'll listen. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, thank you. I mean, listen, I think your characterization of the fact that we wanted, you know, Edwin to stay, that we had a, you know, a plan in place that we felt, you know, was important in an off season where we had a lot of work to do and a lot of decisions to make, that we needed to chart a course where we presented what we felt was a very fair offer, that if the player wanted to stay here should have been more than enough and ultimately more than he got, you know, for him to stay. And that, you know, we felt, and again, in hindsight, you know, you can't know exactly how things are going to transpire. We felt that we needed to have alternatives, and we needed to move quickly to the alternatives in order to conduct the rest of our offseason and put together the best team. So what I would say is, you know, it's always going to be about building a team, you know, never just about collecting talent and never about one player. It's about building a championship team and looking at all the sum of those parts. We're always going to have respect for players. You know, Edwin's a guy that, you know, we'll always appreciate, like and respect, and want to, you know, very passionately beat when we play. But this game's, you know, built on relationships you build over years and respect you engender for players and the way they go about their business. And Edwin's a guy that, you know, when we're not playing, we'll certainly appreciate and celebrate. But it's not easy. It's tough. And I know that as a fan, you know, part of the beauty of the game is becoming attached to players and emotionally attached. And, you know, our jobs are to find guys worthy of you celebrating. And then, as Ross likes to say, to watch those guys jump up and down in the middle of the diamond on the mound, you know, after celebrating championships. And I think, you know, sometimes along the way, as we work towards that, there are decisions that are going to be more popular and there are others going to be less popular than others. But know that the intent and the desire is always to, in the best way possible, build a championship team.
Mark, is the introduction of Scott Boras into the realm of Aaron Sanchez's contract, is that going to create an issue? You know, I mean, a lot of people looked at the you know, the decision to renew him. I mean, I cover the Montreal Expos. I saw stars get renewed every year, so I don't get upset about it. But is that going to be an issue? Are you worried at all that you may have an agent who likes to be very proactive when it comes to pitch counts, things of that nature in particular?
I mean, I've dealt with Scott for 20 years. I mean, mm-hmm. He's nothing new for me. So he's one of the brightest, you know, most talented guys. He tends to have, you know, a very, very clear way of thinking, which is guided from his own interests and his players' interests. Our interests, 98% of the time, and I think this is where, you know, it may get a little convoluted and maybe some of the words that Scott uses, our interest 98-99% of the time align with the player's interest and with Scott's interest. You know, we're the best team, we're the best organization that we can possibly be if Aaron Sanchez and all of our players play to their best ability. So, you know, every decision we make is just about maximizing Aaron's potential. As we walked through last year, you know, we were the ones that were trying to be so protective of balancing his future, you know, his potential, his upside with what was at stake for our team. And so, you know, I think we're going to always build a respectful, caring, trustworthy relationship with our players. And, you know, he's chosen an advocate that is a very bright, intelligent guy. I want to learn from him where I can, factor that in. But ultimately, I trust the people in place here to provide us with, you know, the best information. Most importantly, Aaron will be engaged in that process, right, as he was last year. And Aaron will help us guide, you know, what's best for his career and what's best for our team.
So, Mark, what should we make of that little skirmish with Scott, though? Is that just him demonstrating to his client that, hey, I'm here?
If there was a skirmish,
it's a one-way skirmish.
It was shadow boxing to use your you know, comfort level for you.
Yeah.
I didn't feel there was any skirmish.
But the fact that he would go public over that, which is, you know, again, a relatively minor thing, as Jeff said, it's not an uncommon thing.
Right.
But is that just Scott being Scott?
That's a very consistent, you know, method of communication and, you know, maybe doing business in his mind that, you know, I don't feel is constructive because, again, our interests are aligned. We have the same interests. So we plan to work with him and work with Aaron. You know, Ross and I have told Aaron, listen, we want to pay you a lot of money. We want to pay you more money. You know, the more we pay you, the better, because that means you perform better. So I think that's a misperception. Like, you know, we want our guys to all do extremely well enough for us to have to pay them a ton of money. Because if we have to pay them a ton of money, Steven, that means they're performing on the field, which means we have a much better chance to be a championship team.
Let's go to Tom in Waterloo. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, with Mark Shapiro. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, Mark, I'm just fishing on Buffalo. I'm very curious on your opinion on depth. I mean, I'm looking at the catchers and infield, and I'm not, you know, it doesn't look that bad. I know, you know, you guys are going to move 40, 50 players by the end of the year. So I'm just curious on the pitching and the outfield down there. Are you happy? And any movement from AA? Do you see any movement from AA this year? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And, you know, it's funny because I'm never, you know, completely comfortable with depth. It's one of those things where you'd like to have more. You know, I do think it's been a spring training where we've been a little bit surprised with both some of the bullpen depth and position player depth. And again, you don't want to evaluate in spring training, but feel a little better about that. I think if you said, you know, what's your one fear heading into the season, it probably would be the drop off from our fifth starter to our sixth starter. You know, that is not a subtle drop off. You know, while we do have guys capable of filling in for 2, 3, 4 games, and I say 2, 3, 4 starts, I'm not sure that at Buffalo, as we start the season, you know, we're going to have a guy that we feel like can hop into the rotation and pitch a half a year in our rotation and sustain a championship level of starting pitching performance. So I would say that, you know, that again, there are some guys, again, that we feel good about depth-wise. The other thing I'd say is, you know, we have star players. You know, there is no third baseman that could come in and come close to Josh Donaldson's performance. You know, we don't have a catcher that can even come close to what, you know, Russell Martin can do out there, both in the way he plays and the games he calls and the way he leads to the way he performs offensively. So, you know, some of the challenge of depth is because the level of performance, you know, at our major league club is so high. Just one follow-up point, because you mentioned AA and moving guys from there. I think you've already kind of seen and heard from us, you know, we are going to be a little on the slower, more methodical side. I read some quotes from Brian Cashman yesterday. If you haven't read that on Trade Rumors or read his article, he views to be his biggest mistakes having rushed starting pitching, and that he feels that that has undermined the success of the Yankees over the last 5 or 6 years, because the impatience of the market and maybe their front office, and, you know, has led them to rush pitchers when they weren't established. Now, listen, going slow doesn't assure they're going to be successful when they get there, but it certainly allows a player and a pitcher to have a stronger foundation when they get to the big leagues with which to make the adjustments. They'll have had more failure. They'll have had more success. They ultimately will be a better coach of themselves, which they need to be when they get there. And a much stronger base and foundation. So I would say you're not going to see us rush guys. You will see some players that, when they have exceptional level of success and aren't challenged at the level they're at, you'll see us move them. And those will be decisions where the players make for us, and those are the best ones that we make.
One of those depth options is Matt Latos. You know, he told Arash Madani last week, I think, that he would accept a minor league assignment. I don't know. Is that your understanding? And what do you think you've got there, Mark? It's been kind of hard to read this spring.
Yeah.
There have been times when he's looked like he could be a, you know, legitimate sixth guy for you if you needed him. But what do you think?
That's not a conversation we've had, Adam, yet. You know, I think we're going to use the time all the way through. And, you know, he's, you know, I guess I look at the body of work. The one remarkable thing about him is he's still pretty young, you know, which is surprising because he got to the big league so young and he has a lot of experience. He's certainly shown at spots down here that he's a big league pitcher. Other times, you know, it's been, you know, a little more inconsistent. You hate to evaluate during spring training, but for a guy like that, you are. I guess I'd answer it in a little bit of a cop-out. We're going to use all the time we got. You know, that's really we still have 10 days, and, you know, we're going to use those 10 or 9 days to make it as the best decision possible. And, you know, one of that could be you know, a starter in AAA if that's something he would accept. The other one could be, you know, a spot in our bullpen to try to preserve, you know, his our ability to keep him. But, you know, we'll work through that the best we can. And he's certainly one of those guys that both experience, track record, and similar stuff to the other guys, you know, says it would probably be preferable for us.
Brendan in Abbotsford, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Brendan.
Hey, guys. Hey, Mark. It's great to chat with you. I had a couple or a comment for you and then a question. First of all, I just wanted to say with some of these articles that have come out this spring just on the developments of high performance, nutrition, strength and conditioning, all that stuff, it's exciting to see kind of the strides that the organization has taken since you took over and have the Jays seemingly at the forefront of such an important element of the modern-day athlete. So it's maybe an understated thing amongst fans, but definitely appreciative of what's going on behind the scenes with the Jays and the strides being made there.
Thanks.
My question for you is about just kind of the TV ratings and the impact that has on the Jays. I've been looking up some of the numbers over the last couple of years, and it seems right around when you took the job of in the summer of 2015, the Jays were around 500K average on TV. Now they're up over a million. Next highest in baseball is 200,000. And at the same time, we're seeing all these kind of crazy TV contracts out there. We're seeing the full terms from all these other big market, media market teams. But it's always been an unknown amongst Jays fans what the TV contract is. Are the Jays getting fair market value? It seems like one of the most desirable teams for a network to have in all of baseball, given the 1 million viewership. So what can you tell us about the Jays TV contract and where it's currently at? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not as easy and simple, and it's probably definitely different. You cannot compare it to values in the United States or the other 29 major league teams that operate under a different set of regulations, a different regulatory system. The Canadian regulatory system both ensures that the networks are receive different level of compensation and are paid differently based upon those numbers and those ratings. I would say you can't diminish how exceptional the ratings are. I mean, it's spectacular. It's a reflection of not just Toronto, but the entire country. And I think it's something that shows the level of support and the depth of support. It's something that we're both proud of and excited about, and something that I think from a monetization perspective, you know, our contracts in the middle of 3 years, hopefully it will continue to go up as a result of that, because it definitely has a positive impact when you look at advertising and some other things. But again, what I would say is you cannot judge apples to apples to what the U.S. contracts are. It's a very limited market, you know, really only two different, you know, potential bidders, and much more constrained by a different set of regulations.
When the owner is the broadcaster, Mark, though, MLB does have rules about fair value,
absolutely,
correct?
Absolutely. I'm on the RSDC, the Revenue Sharing Definitions Committee, although I'm recused when it comes to looking at the Blue Jays contract. But yeah, there's a, you know, it's called a related party transaction, and they do go in and audit those and ensure that what has occurred is can be looked at and judged as an arm's length transaction, meaning that regardless if our owner owns both the team and the network, you know, they're going to go in and say, you know, would the outcome, had that not be the case, at least be somewhat similar.
Rocky and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mark, I kind of followed you with the Indians as well when you were the GM, and the way you built that team, I think is that you built through the farm by trades or building through the draft. And you know, with that being said, the day you took the job as president of the Blue Jays, how satisfied are you with the farm system? Because I see that you did build some depth in that farm system, and I know that it's going to take time for these prospects to develop and get called up to the big leagues. And I also remember you were saying how the Red Sox went through that system, and one of the reasons is Ben Sherrington. Now he's part of the Blue Jays. How satisfied are you with the system, and who's the closest prospect do you think would be called up for the Blue Jays? Because we didn't see any of the prospects being called up last year.
Yeah, so we did have three guys debut last year. They weren't impact prospects. They were more bullpen guys. But I think, you know, over time, you certainly want to have more. I look at the Red Sox as being a good example of, regardless of being a big market club, you know, they're fueled by incredibly talented young players that they developed and drafted or traded for in trade. So, you know, whether it's Benintendi or Mookie Betts or Jackie Bradley Jr. or even Dustin Pedroia, you know, you look around their team and actually, you know, doing that enables you to then go into the free agency at a level where if there's a player you want, you can absolutely go get him, or a player you want to extend, you know, you can do whatever it takes to extend him. So I guess I would say sustainable championship teams are dependent on identifying, acquiring, and developing players. I mean, that's kind of the nature of what we do. If you want to build a sustainable championship team, which is certainly possible in this market, you know, much more so than where I came from, then you better spend a lot of energy, a lot of time. You better be relentless and have a sense of urgency with which how you go about identifying players at the amateur level, at the international level, or at the acquisition of trade level. You better be aggressive in acquiring that talent whenever the windows of opportunity present themselves, and that's largely, you know, the way the system creates it. And then when it comes to development, you want to obsess about how to help those players reach their potential mentally, physically, and fundamentally. And that gets back to both the prior caller talking about performance and where the resources are, but you're thinking, you know, being very thoughtful about getting the best resources possible, and that's facilities, equipment, coaches, you know, tools, all those different things that are out there that will enable our players to be the best that they can be, and even maybe gain, again, competitive advantages both in that as well. So it's really a comprehensive way of looking at things. It's exhaustive as I'm talking to you about it. Mm-hmm. You know, five things are popping into my head that we need to do. You're never really done. You're always trying to get better every day, whether it's working on what we feel to be a championship training facility in Dunedin, where we need to make huge strides and need to get a lot better, or, you know, finding the best coaches or finding the best resource for sleep, hydration, nutrition. You know, we're looking to gain a bunch of small competitive advantages to help our players be better than the teams we compete against.
Now, so I'll throw a name out there. You know, Rowdy Tellez, a lot of people liked what they saw of him this spring. He had a great year last year, obviously, in the minors, but looked, you know, in the minds of some people, looks really close. You know, how close is he? I know you guys are very patient with prospects, and but it's been a long time since a position player drafted and developed by this organization cracked the major league lineup. It's not something that's happened a lot in the last few years. But is Rowdy Tellez a 2017 guy potentially, or do you see him further down the road?
So I'll put the disclaimer on that Rowdy Tellez has never had an at-bat at AAA.
Understood.
Yeah. And so we're not going to fall into the trap of getting excited by spring training. But there are a lot of things to be excited about with Rowdy Tellez, many of which a fan couldn't even see, which is who he is. And yeah, I just got him together with Sean Casey, who's in camp for 3 days yesterday. And, you know, Sean was talking to Rowdy, and Rowdy was asking Sean questions, you know, about approach versus left-handed hitters, about defense. And you know, Sean stopped him about halfway through a 45-minute conversation and said, who are you texting? And Rowdy said, I'm not texting. I'm taking notes. You know, and so this is a 21-year-old kid who is, you know, taking Troy Tulowitzki out to dinner so he can pick his brain and write down six pages of notes while he's talking to him. It's a guy that, you know, will look at you in the eye and say, I'm going to hit. There's no question. So I'm thinking about how do I, you know, continue to make sure my body allows me to stay on the field? How do I work on my defense? How do I be a better base runner? I think when you talk to Rock Raines, he'll tell you that, you know, Rowdy Tellez is not a base stealer, but he's one of the best base runners in the organization. So I look at the sum of what they say about him as a person, you know, the thought that goes into his game, the desire to get better. And I combine that with his youth, which is an asset. He's the same age as a lot of the college players that'll be drafted this year in the June draft, same age, which is remarkable. And you say he's going to be a AAA this year. And then the final answer I would give you is, you know, he'll tell us.
He's a guy, though, that, Mark, not that long ago, people were saying he might not have a defensive position. And it looks like he can be an above-average first baseman.
He's committed to completely reshaping his body. So if you look at pictures of him, from 2 years ago, and you look at him right now, it's a completely different body. So he's committed. I mean, it's something I've talked to him about too. It's not for some people. It's not easy, and it's a genetic challenge. And other guys, are just gifted. With a certain body. He certainly has worked extremely hard. To put himself in the position he's in.
Let's go to Jay in North York here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Jay.
Good morning. Pleasure to speak. Pleasure and privilege to speak with you, Mark. I have a question that I've been wanting to ask you for a while. And you were on the Jeff Blair Show a couple of months ago, one of your first interviews. Jeff asked you a question about why the rush to go with, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank now. I'm a little nervous. Your new designated hitter, who you go?
Kendrys Morales.
Kendrys Morales, with about 48 hours after the four-year $80 million was offered to Encarnacion. He also had opportunities to sign Encarnacion the last offseason, and the deal was taken off the table so quickly, almost like, some Major League Baseball reporters, not only in Toronto, but throughout the MLB network, throughout the United States, some of the top guys all agreed that it was a little bit too quick. And I was questioning, did the Blue Jays really even want Edwin Encarnacion? Because if they stuck around longer, it would have been very feasible, obviously, to have landed him. And now the Blue Jays are stuck with Dustin Smoke at first base, who's a huge question mark. And obviously Cleveland, your main competitor in the playoffs last year, has got your first baseman and DH of last year. I want you to comment on why negotiation was not attempted earlier in the offseason, and why the plug was pulled so quickly to sign Kendrys Morales, who probably would have still been available later. And there were also other options that were available to you.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's very hard for you as a fan. You're operating on just a limited amount of information because we don't conduct negotiations in the public. So I'm not going to go back through. I can tell you that a lot of what you said there are not the facts. They're the facts put together with the information that you have, which is the media, and which is not the realm that we're dealing in. So definitively, the amount of time that Edwin had that contract in front of him was longer than 2 days. The amount of time that we talked last spring was longer than whatever you characterize it to be, much longer than that. And but there needs to be, and I can also tell you that pretty good information that Kendrys Morales would not have been available for very long after we signed him. So, again, I'm not sure where you're getting your information from. I'm pretty sure it's not from me or Ross. So I'm pretty sure it's not factual. And there's the sources that are out there trying to put it together are doing the best they can to read into a situation. So it is very difficult. You'd love to be able to give it all the time possible, but you've also got to conduct a business, and you've got to have a there is no successful negotiation without both alternatives and a walk away. And we communicated extremely clearly, honestly, openly with both an agent and with Edwin directly, that we felt that what was in the best interest of you, a fan of the Blue Jays and the Blue Jays, and our ability to field a team, a championship team, was to try to get that, go after the guy we wanted, clearly wanted, definitively wanted, in Edwin, and try to sign him quickly. And if that did not happen, for us to move to the other scenarios and the other plans. And we ultimately feel like where we landed, could be good, as good, if not better.
You may have used an interesting phrase there, because I think fans do not realize that you do have to have a walk-away point in any, not just your own fruit, but any negotiation. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in a position where you have 2 weeks before spring training. You got to make four moves. That's when you make mistakes.
Exactly. No, I mean, I think the process of walking through a negotiation, whether it's an extension for an ARB-eligible player, whether it's a free agent contract, if you saw the amount of information that goes into kind of assessing risk, the risk and the benefit of a player, and thinking about him from a perspective of subjective, how do our scouts project the performance over the next 2, 3, 4 years, whatever that time frame is, how do we analytically and objectively look for that player to perform and age over the length of a contract based upon both his own performance and the history of players that are similar? How do we physically, and how does our performance team look at that player? Because ultimately you got to be on the field to be able to contribute. How do we feel that player is as a teammate, character, makeup, personality? How dependable, reliable is he? we're factoring all those things in and doing an enormous amount of work to determine, hey, this is our walkaway. This is where our threshold for risk lies. And ultimately, we know we still may be wrong because we're dealing with human beings. But, you know, we set those points very carefully prior to entering into a negotiation.
Mark, listen, we really appreciate you joining us today. I know time is at a premium down here for people involved with this team. Thanks so much for taking calls, and best of luck this season.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. I look forward to April 11th and the team coming back home and being in front of our fans, which are the best in Major League Baseball, and beginning the journey, yeah. You know, in just a short period of time. It's exciting. It's hard to believe.